some of the ideas percolating in my mind. In fact, a class at Elisha ben Avuya, I had given prior to 1 year on Rosh Hashanah, as we'll see, the story of Elisha ben Avuya has a transformational element to it, and perhaps even an element of tshuva or not, which is what we'll see. But as I thought about it, I realized that there's a number of figures in the Talmud, figures in more recent Jewish history that were banned from the Beit Midrash, that were excommunicated, or that were shunned in some way, and they all speak to the Jewish experience and teach us something about Jewish tradition and living within that Jewish tradition or living outside that Jewish tradition. And I think perhaps the most famous of those who were banned from the Beit Midrash is none other than our topic for this evening, Elisha ben Avuya. There are a number of sources that speak about the life of Elisha ben Avuya, and they're not recorded in a chronological fashion. Right? So it doesn't. There are bits and pieces that come together and give us a composite, and there are retellings of the same stories in both the Talmud Bavli and Yerushalmi, the Babylonian Talmud, as well as the Jerusalem Talmud, Midrashic material, Rut Rabbah, Kohelet Rabbah. And so I have not focused on the text by giving you the exact location where you can find this material. All of it is either in the Talmud Bavli and Yerushalmi and Chagiga, or in Medrash Rabbah, Kohelet and Rut. A couple of the other sources, I've given you the general location, but I've organized that material in a way that I'd like to present it in order to give us a composite picture of who Elisha ben Avuya was, why he's first and foremost number one in my series of banned from the Beis Medrash, and why was he banned from the Beis Medrash? What is it about his history? What is it about his story? And what are some of the takeaways that we can learn from this enigmatic figure? Of course, in the broader Jewish community, even those who don't learn Talmud, even those who don't learn Medrash, know Elisha ben Avuya from Milton Steinberg's book, As a Driven Leaf, which paints a rather sympathetic picture to Elisha ben Avuya. And what we'll see is that that's not necessarily wrong. I think what we'll see is that the rabbis also paint a somewhat sympathetic picture to Elisha with complexity. Let's get right into it. So here we are. Let me just make it a little bigger. The source, I want to start with the source that tells us something about what we can call the moment that he gets banned. Where does Elisha ben Avuya get banned? It's clear that he's a banned figure, as we'll read coming up. But I want to start with an episode from the life of Elisha ben Avuya that can be pointed to as the moment that he's banned from the Beit Midrash. So here we go. The story is told that there was once, and by the way, through reading this story, we'll get a sense of some of the enigmatic elements of who Elisha ben Avuya was. So we're told in this story, there was an incident involving Acher, who was riding on a horse, and Acher is another name for Elisha ben Avuya. Acher means the other one, the one who dare not be named, if you will, because of the taboo that is Elisha ben Avuya. Why, we'll see in a moment, and how that came about. So he's riding in his horse on Shabbos. Yeah, of course, right? Riding your horse on Shabbos. That's not a problem for the rabbis in the Talmud. Well, of course it is. Well, but it gets even more enigmatic and more interesting, or perhaps weird, if you will. Rabbi Meir is walking behind him to learn Torah from the very same Acher. So we have this flagrant Sabbath desecrator who's riding his horse on Shabbos, and we have the great Rabbi Meir, the great Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was a Tana who lived around the same time as Rabbi Akiva, and he was a student of Elisha ben Avuya of Acher. And we know that Rabbi Meir is a great Talmudic sage, so much so that the halacha is like Rabbi Meir in most instances. And Stam Mishnah Kara Meir, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, the editor, the compiler of the Mishnah, when he wants to quote a halacha without naming the individual, in other words, the consensus, we can assume that the anonymous Mishnah, for the most part, is Rabbi Meir. That's how great Rabbi Meir is. A general statement of the Talmud can be of the Mishnah is attributed to Rabbi Meir. And this Rabbi Meir would learn from none other than Acher, Elisha ben Avuya, even when Elisha ben Avuya was flagrantly violating the Sabbath and riding his horse. Just to note, throughout the Talmud, riding a horse was something that Roman nobility would do. More on that in a few minutes, but keep that in mind. Right? After a while, right? So this is a very enigmatic scene. Acher, whom we know to be Elisha ben Avuya, is a very enigmatic figure. After a while, Acher said to Meir, Rabbi Meir, Meir, turn back, for I've already estimated and measured according to the steps of my horse that the Shabbat boundary ends here, and you may therefore venture no further. Now, Elisha ben Avuya is flagrantly violating the Shabbos, but he tells his student, you can't walk more than 2,000 amot cubits from outside the city. That's what we call tchum. That's the boundaries of one's, how far one is allowed to walk leave his home on Shabbat, right? And Rabbi Meir says to him, you too return to the correct path, right? You're telling me to return back to my home so that I don't violate Shabbat. Why don't you return? Why don't you do tshuva? Acher, my Rebbe, Elisha ben Avuya. But Elisha ben Avuya says, have I not already told you that I'm already heard behind the divine curtain? Return, rebellious children. Shuvu b'nei shovavim. Chutz me'acher. Right? Acher had this thing stuck in his head, and where he got that from, we'll see in a little bit later, that he could not repent. It was impossible for him to repent. He thought he heard that from heaven, right? You know, I kind of think about some of the quote-unquote heretics that I've met in my life. Oftentimes, they want to talk to me because I'm a rabbi. You know, right? And so, you know, I don't judge them. I don't have any problem with them. But they're, you know, there's a certain type. Someone who grew up in a religious home. Someone who may have even went to yeshiva. Someone who has a very strong background and wants you to know he has a strong background, right? And then, you know, maybe the conversation turns to, oh, you know, it's interesting that you yourself are not observant anymore. And he tells you, oh, I'm an apikaris, right? I'm the apikaris in the family, right? I am, that's the trajectory that my life has taken me, right? And that's, I feel like that's what happens here. Rabbi Meir is learning from Acher. He must have been a tremendous Talmud Chacham. We'll see in a moment. And for whatever reason, he feels stuck. He can't do tshuva. Nevertheless, and this is the part that I wanted us to focus on for why this is the first source. Nevertheless, Rabbi Meir took hold of him and brought him to the study hall. Acher said to a child by way of divination, recite your verse that you studied today to me. There was a tradition that Acher knew among the rabbis that if you ask a young student, a young child, what he learns, then that's foreshadowing, foretelling. It's some way the child, out of the mouths of babes, certainly the words of Torah, out of the mouths of youth, is an omen that was viewed as legitimate among the rabbis. So the Acher asks the student that Rabbi Meir takes him right back to the Beis Medrash. He doesn't learn. He wants to talk to the students, and he says, "What pasuk?" So the student, the young child, said, "There's no peace," said the Lord, "concerning the wicked," right? So Acher says, yeah, he's talking about me. And Rabbi Meir takes him to another synagogue until he had brought him to 13 different locations where all the children recited to him similar verses that speak of hopelessness, situations of the wicked. In the last one, right, Elisha said, recite your verse for me. And the student said, to the wicked, God says, what is for you to declare my statutes? V'lo rasha. But the Gemara relates that this child had a stutter. right? My wife's a speech therapist. She talks about stutters, and you know, it's a whole. She actually took a seminar specifically at the Stuttering Institute of New York, because it's a specialty within speech pathology. And this child had a stutter, so he said la 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 sha, and it sounded like Alicia. And so Alicia has no future instead of the wicked. And that's what he thought he heard. And this made Alicia think that the child was deliberately insulting him, and he freaked out. Some say Acher, this Alicia, had a knife, and he literally murdered the child and cut him up into 13 pieces and sent him to all the different synagogues that he had gone to. Others say that he said, had I had a knife, I would have done this to you, right? So Rabbi Meir takes Elisha to a Beit Midrash, 13 of them. Elisha wants to get a sense of what they're learning. He asks the child, in each location, the child speaks about wickedness and evil activity, which sets Elisha off. And obviously that is an indication that he was banned, he was not wanted, he was rejected from the Beit Midrash. This is a tragic tale, because if we look at some of the other sources, Elisha was a great rabbi. The Midrash in Ruth Rabbah tells us that when Elisha would speak after his classes, after his shiurim, all the great rabbis would kiss him on his forehead. He was not just a great sage, he was the teacher of great sages, right? He was like numero uno. And we only have a couple of lessons from him. One here quoted in the Talmud of Moed Katan about Shiva, right? Let's say you only hear about the death of a loved one 3 days after, or 3 years, in this case, after it happened. How many days do you sit Shiva? So Elisha ben Avuya was of the opinion that no matter how old the news is, a close relative would sit Shiva. But out of the thousands of lessons that Elisha ben Avuya must have taught, very few are taught in his name in the Talmud. Another one that is taught in his name in the Talmud, which will be important for us later on in tonight's shiur, is the one in Pirkei Avot. Here we go, right? Elisha ben Avuya, Haya Omer. Elisha ben Avuya would say, Halo med yeled lama hu doma, right? If a child learns, what is it compared to? The yoke tuval niyar chadash, to ink written upon a new writing sheet, right? Black ink on white paper, right? Halo med zakein lama hu doma, right? We believe in lifelong learning, that you should always be exercising your brain, and that you're never too old to learn. Nonetheless, as we get older, it gets a little harder to learn. And Elisha ben Avuya put this in terms of an older person who learns. It's like ink written on an erase sheet, right? You can see it, but it's not quite as clear, right? It's been erased a few times. It's not quite as clear. And once something's been written and erased, you can never take that away, right? Like we know, right? There's no eraser that completely removes the smudge of the pencil. It's always there. And that's what Elisha ben Avuya said, right? And that lesson is going to be important, not just for what it says, which experience shows, you know, if you want to be a prodigy in certain areas, it's easier if you're a child prodigy, right? That doesn't mean you can't become expert or learned in a topic, but once the paper is erased, it's much more difficult for the writing on it to be as clear and as crisp. More on that a little bit later. So Elisha ben Avuya is a great rabbi. He's the teacher of Rabbi Meir. We know that something went awry, and the evil of Elisha is spelled out in the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi tells us, I'm just gonna translate, but it's here on page 2 of the source sheet. So we say that Elisha ben Avuya, Mani Acher, who's Acher, in case there was any question, Elisha ben Avuya is Acher, Shehaya Horeg Rabbe Torah, right? He murdered Torah scholars, wow. Right, when he went bad, he went all in. When he was good, he was really good. When he was righteous and a scholar, he was like the top. And when he's Acher, he's the worst. What did he do? He murdered Torah sages, right? Whether it's literal or figurative. If it's literal, it's because he turned as an accomplice to the Romans. Think about it. He lived at the same time as Rabbi Akiva. What was what was the end of Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva was murdered during the Hadrianic persecutions in the aftermath of the Bar Kokhba revolt. If Elisha ben Avuya lived during that time, he had plenty of opportunity to work together with the Romans to undermine Jewish life, either spiritually or by physically murdering Torah scholars. One of the things he would do, and there's a couple of stories that the Talmud Rishami says, we have to read them inside, let me tell two of them. One of them is that Elisha ben Avuya would go to the Beis Medrash, right? Again, not for himself, he was, because he was already off the path. He was looking to undermine Jewish life. And what he would do is any star student, he would tell them, you know, Torah study is not a good job for a nice Jewish boy with a good cup. Go into something else. Oh, you're very good in Talmud, become a lawyer. And I remember, I mean, not to compare, but many of my teachers, I remember the pre-law advisor at Yeshiva University would always say the best way to study for the LSATs is to study Talmud. Right? If you can study Talmud, you can follow along the back and forth in a folio of Talmud, you're set for the LSATs and for law school. Could be, but Elisha would say, you have a good head, go into law. You have a good head, go into plumbing. You have a good head, become a shoemaker, right? Go into some honorable job, profession, not Torah studies, not Torah scholarship. He was undermining, right, the future, right? And I always say, I've said this in the past, in the Haredi community, it's viewed as a wonderful thing to spend lifelong learning, like to spend your whole life in the Beis Medrash learning in Kollel, wherever the case may be. And certainly, we have a different approach. We believe that ideally, most people will be spending their lives learning Torah in combination with finding a way to make a living, right, an honest living, right, a respectable living, whatever that may be. But I always remind people that we also believe that Torah study requires expertise as well. That everyone agrees that there should be a class of individuals who have the ability, have the patience, have the concentration, have the ability to learn Torah and to teach Torah, that we should support them. I always give the example, if we believe that that there should be something called a Rhodes Scholar, that there should be something called a Juilliard Scholarship, that people who are experts in fields of culture, of music, of art, of academics, should be supported in their endeavors and be able to focus all their attention, right? You may not, right, somebody who gets a full scholarship to Juilliard, they may not be living high on the hog, but they'll have their basic needs met so that they can spend all their time in their expertise, playing the harpsichord, or the triangle, or the cymbals, or the violin, or the piano, or the harp, right? We believe that that's worthwhile. We should also believe that it's worthwhile, certainly, when it comes to Torah study. But that's what Elisha did. Elisha said, go into some other business. Maybe he forced them to, maybe the Romans pulled them out of the Beis Medrash in order for them to go that way. Another story is told that the Romans forced the Jews to violate Shabbos. Think about Elisha on the horse, right? That's something that he did himself. And what Elisha would do is that the learned Jews would try to make it so that their violation of Shabbat was not on a Torah level, but was on a rabbinic level or even less. So for instance, the Romans would tell the Jews, you have to carry. So what they would do is the Jews would carry something, let's say a book, two people would carry one book. And the halacha is if something can be carried by one person, is carried by two people, neither of them are liable for the malacha of carrying. And Elisha ben Avuya came along and said, no, each of you have to carry the book separately. It was undermining the Jews' attempt, even under Roman persecution, to follow Torah, to abide by the laws of Shabbat. So, we get these two different pictures. Elisha, the great Torah scholar and sage, the student, the teacher of the great Rabbi Meir, and Elisha, the evil Elisha, who tried to undermine Torah study and Torah observance. The question then becomes, what went wrong? So So here we go. There's a lot of explanations to this question. We have the very famous story of Abra Nichnasu L'Pardes, that four great rabbis entered the orchard, or as we understand that to mean, dealt with the loftiest secrets of the Torah, Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Acher, and Elisha ben Avuya, who we know to be the other, Acher, and Rabbi Akiva, right? So Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Acher, and Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva says to them, when you get to the upper, when you get to this esoteric level, you'll see a divine image, depiction, which will be a marble. And when you see the marble, don't say it's water, because it may look like water, but that just means that you've been superficial. And obviously, if we're talking about the deep esoteric lessons and images that you're gonna see, you can't be superficial about it. You gotta see it for what it really is. Let's learn it that way. Again, there's a lot of interpretations of this. I'm just giving you the one that fits in best with how this is gonna all unfold as we focus on Elisha ben Avuya. And what do we say? That it was a dangerous experience for three of them. One of them died, one of them went crazy. Only Rabbi Akiva came out okay. What happened to Acher? What happened to Elisha ben Avuya? So if you see that on the underlined phrase, Acher uprooted what had been planted, right? It's a euphemism, right? He went heretical, right? And part of what it means to chop down the saplings, right, is that he, saplings could be a reference to young Torah students, right? And we saw what he tried to do to negate young Torah students, directing them into other professions, or his response to the young Torah student who told him a foreboding verse that seemed to speak of evil, or perhaps of him. And so it could have been that this lofty experience, again, he was only worthy of having it, was that he was on a high level, spiritual level, but it made him go off the path, it made him go heretical. But we want to, what exactly was in that vision? What exactly was in that experience of the Pardes, of the lofty secrets of the Torah, that made him go heretical? So one explanation is he saw an angel that was sitting while writing the merits of the Jewish people. And this didn't jive with what Elisha ben Avuya understood to be what happens up in heaven, right? He said, I thought in heaven, everyone stands except for God, and God sits. Here we have an angel that's recording the merits of the Jewish people and is sitting, right? So instead of taking a step back and realizing, wow, this is like beyond my comprehension. Wow, I may be misunderstanding what I'm seeing. He says, no, I know what's happening here, and I know that it doesn't jibe. It doesn't sync with what I've learned elsewhere. It must be there are two authorities, Shtei Rishuyot. Now, Acher didn't say heaven forbid, because Acher said there must be dualism, right? That's a very common perspective, certainly throughout history, of divinity. There's a good God and a bad and an evil God, right? The God that does good can't be the one that does evil, right? We say, no, we don't understand God's plan. So what we think is evil is from the perspective of human beings. And that really there's one God that does everything. But dualism was pretty common. But Elisha bought into it. Elisha said, if there's this angel that's sitting, that must be the other force. God sits. This angel sits, there must be a duality in heaven. Right? And not only that, but Elisha ben Avuya says, I'm going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Right? Right? The equivalent of, oh, I had this, I mean, again, how the mighty have fallen. Right? It's the equivalent of somebody having this incredibly esoteric, divine, spiritual experience. It doesn't jive with what he expected or she expected to see. So what's the next thing they do? They go out to Burger King and have a cheeseburger. Right? So that's what he does. Elisha says, right? He had this heretical thought, right? And instead of, you know, defending monotheism, instead of perhaps questioning whether he should give everything up, he strays. He said, let me go enjoy myself. Right? And he went astray. He finds a prostitute, solicits her. She says, "Aren't you Elisha ben Avuya? How can someone of your stature be engaged in such immorality?" So to prove that he's not the same Elisha ben Avuya, he again violates Shabbos, right? And again, beyond the scope of our shir, but see how Shabbos keeps playing a role in this, right? Elisha's on a horse on Shabbos. He helps the Romans to enable the Jews to violate Shabbos and to show this prostitute that he's not the great sage Rabbi Elisha ben Avuya. He plucks a radish from the ground. We know that that's one of the malachot of Shabbat. You're not allowed to harvest, cut from the ground. So when he wants to prove that he's not the same person whom she thinks he is, to which she responds, "You must not be Elisha ben Avuya. You're an acher. You're someone else." Right? In this telling, in other places, it seems that the name acher, the other, was given by the sages themselves. Here, the story goes that the prostitute gave him the name Acher. "You must not be who I think you are because you're violating Shabbat and you're soliciting a prostitute." And this all takes place because of his theological conundrum and confusion. What he saw in heaven, an angel sitting down, that to him meant there's dualism. And therefore he throws everything out, right? The danger of theological confusion impacting our Jewish identity. Right, and later on we'll see that that's a real danger. But that's not the only theological question that the rabbis attribute, conundrum, confusion that the rabbis attribute to Elisha ben Avuya. This source here in the Yerushalmi tells the story that Elisha had a different experience, two experiences that he cannot reconcile and led him to heresy, and the experiences had to do with the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan. The mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan, of course, we know, is that if you want to take the chicks or the eggs in a nest, you have to send away the mother bird. So Elisha ben Avuya, and the Torah specifically says, as part of that pasuk, L'man yitav lach v'arachta yamim, right, that there's a reward, that it'll be good for you and your quote-unquote days will be lengthened. Elisha saw one day in Genusar that somebody went and climbed a tree and went and took the mother bird along with the chicks. And nothing happened to him. He was perfectly fine. The next day, someone went up and shooed the mother bird away before he took the eggs. And that person fell off a ladder and was mortally bitten by a poisonous snake. Right? And by the way, you know, and Elisha immediately says, this is wrong. And he goes heretical. By the way, again, the question is not a bad question. If the Torah says that you can have long life by fulfilling this mitzvah, and you specifically see someone fulfilling the mitzvah and dying, because killing himself because of it, that can raise some questions. And by the way, the Talmud explains why it's not a question, because the language of barachta yamim, long life, is not about this world, it's about the world to come. Right? So it's not a bad question. Right? And that's going to be some of our answer. The problem with Elisha is his response to tough questions is to run away and to become heretical and to not only and to abuse the system that he came from, right? To throw it all away, the baby with the bathwater. But you know, these questions are legitimate. What do you do with a question? How do you grapple with a question? That's the cautionary tale of Elisha ben Avuya. That's what gets you thrown out of the Beis Medrash, not the theologically problematic question necessarily, but it's the response to it. It's throwing everything out, saying, "Forget it, I'm not Jewish. Forget it, I'm not keeping any of this stuff. It's all a bunch of bunk." Right. By the way, we sometimes say that's the problem with the Russia at the Seder table. It's not the question. It's the dismissing everything about Judaism. Another heartbreaking scenario that Elisha lived through. The end of page 2 in the source sheet tells us a story about the great Rabbi Yehuda. The great Rabbi Yehuda was was killed, was martyred by the Romans. And part of the torture that he underwent was that his tongue was cut out of his mouth and thrown into a garbage heap. And Elisha ben Avuya saw soon afterwards a pig with the mouth of the great Rabbi Yehuda in his mouth, dripping with blood. And this freaked him out. It would freak me out too, right? He says, this is the reward for the great Rabbi Yehuda Nachtom. He couldn't take it. He went heretical, right? So we one source of Elisha ben Avuya's change to Acher was the challenging paradoxes that he saw, the theological questions, the confusion that led to. Page three, the next page on the source sheet, we see another perspective of what went wrong with Rabbi Akiva, Elisha ben Avuya Acher, what got him into trouble. The rabbis say, Acher Mai, what was his failing? So one opinion is that Greek tunes never ceased from his mouth. He was an assimilated Jew. He had picked up some of the habits of the Greeks, right? He would constantly hum Greek songs even though when he was among the sages. But he was drawn to Gentile culture and beliefs, the worst of what culture has, right? There's the best of culture and the worst of culture. And here the sages suggest that that was his issue. Another suggestion, when he would stand after learning in the Beis Medrash, works of heresy, which he had been reading, would fall from his lap. Right? And this is like a famous image of the yeshiva bachar who's reading, you know, novels and underneath his Gemara. That's not what we're saying here. That's not what Acher did. The problem is, even when he was in the world of the Beis Medrash, he was searching everywhere. He was searching in philosophy, in Greek culture, among the Romans. He wasn't disciplined. His search was all over the place. Right? There's a way to go about a search. There's a way to go about having your questions answered. There's a way that we can legitimize your confusion, but yet you can still, you don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. So those are two suggested approaches as to why Elisha ben Avuya turned into Acher and was banned from the Beis Medrash, either to his theological confusion and questions or his searching within the world of Greek philosophy and culture in a way that was problematic. As we continue, but that's the rabbi spent, the Talmud spends a lot of time talking about Elisha's problematic origins. And some of those origin stories start yet from the time he was born or before he was born. Yerushalmi tells us that Elisha ben Avuya's mother while she was pregnant with him, would pass by houses of idolatry where they were offering various offerings, whether it was incense or something else, right? It sounds a little bit like the story of Rivka when she's pregnant with Yaakov and Esav, right? And Rashi tells the story that when she would pass by a house of Torah study, Yaakov would get all excited. And when she would pass by a house of idolatry, Esav would get all excited. Well, I think there's a parallel here that Elisha ben Avuya's mother, when she would pass by a house of idolatry, the fetus would get excited by the smell of that was emanating from the house of idolatry. So all the way from the early beginnings, right? There was problems at the beginning, right? What exactly does that mean? We'll have to see. But whereas that one seems to be a little bit more esoteric, the next story in the Bavli is the one that Elisha ben Avuya gives himself. Elisha ben Avuya offers Rabbi Meir a reason why he went heretical, why he was banned from the Beis Medrash. The story is here in the middle of page two, middle of page three, where Elisha ben Avuya says, it goes back to my bris. Can you imagine? Elisha ben Avuya tells Rabbi Meir, you know why I went heretical? Because of what my father did at my bris. Right? We hear this, right? Like it's right. My parents, let me tell you why I'm the way I am. It goes back to my mother. It goes back to my father. Right? What they did to me. Right? But no, this is what Elisha ben Avuya says. It was my bris. And his father was one of the most respected men of Jerusalem. And he had an illustrious invite list, including that invite list were the great Rebbe Elazar and Rabbi Yehoshua. And, you know, as these formal affairs go, you know, it was dragging on. So Rebbe Elazar turns to Rabbi Yehoshua and says, they're, you know, giving speeches and doing all kinds of nonsense, but you and I, let's learn some Torah. So the story goes that Rebbe Elazar and Rabbi Yehoshua were learning Torah, and they got so involved in it that it was like they recreated Sinai, and fire began to surround Rebbe Elazar and Rabbi Yehoshua. Upon seeing this, Elisha's father, Avuya, says, I want my son to be a Torah scholar. Sounds nice, right? Problem is, Elisha says, my father didn't want me to be a Torah scholar because of the Torah. My father wanted me to be a Torah scholar so that I too could have fire come down from heaven around me. My father liked the impression. My father liked, you know, the outward, the externals. And that was part of who I was from the beginning. Recall what Rabbi Akiva warned Elisha when you're up in heaven, when you're in the Pardes, and you see, right, and you see the marble, don't mistake it for water. Right? The external may look like water, but it's not. It's something much more precious. And Elisha says that was the problem. My father only cared about the externals. He didn't care about the essence of Torah. He liked the kavod that came along with it. And he says, that's why even my beginnings, even my origins, even before I went heretical, there was a problem with the origins of where I came from. And because of that, Elisha seems to have suggested that because the foundations were problematic and rickety, and once it fell, there was no way of recovering from that. Right, so even after Elisha, as we've seen, even after Elisha ben Avuya Zacher, he still has a relationship with his student Rabbi Meir. So much so that if you see this source, right, there's a couple of instances both in the Talmud Bavli and Yerushalmi where Shal Acher Rabbi Meir, La Acher Shiyatzu LeTarbut Ra. This is language from the Yerushalmi actually, that Acher Elisha would engage Rabbi Meir in Torah discussion. It wasn't just that Rabbi Meir would ask Elisha questions. Elisha would initiate Torah conversations with Rabbi Meir and ask him certain questions, right? And this is a particularly telling one. He quotes a pasuk from Iyov, from Job, where it talks about gold and glass, right? Right? So Elisha ben Avuya asked Rabbi Meir, why do we compare Torah scholars to gold and glass, right? So Rabbi Meir suggested it's words of Torah are as difficult to acquire as gold, right? Gold's really hard to acquire, but as easily to lose as glass. They're very delicate, right? Hard to obtain like gold, easy to lose like glass. Elisha ben Avuya says that's not the way your teacher, Rabbi Akiva, my colleague, Rabbi Akiva, taught it. But rather, the way Rabbi Akiva taught it is, why is Torah compared to glass and gold? Because just as glass and gold, right, if they're broken, even if they're shattered, can be repaired, right? You take glass, you melt it, you have glass again. You take gold, you melt it, you can create whatever you need to from gold. So too, a Torah scholar, although he may transgress, has a remedy, right? So Torah scholars are like golden glass, that even if they are broken, even if they sin, they can be repaired. So Rabbi Meir says, that's a wonderful lesson, Elisha. Why don't you apply it to yourself, right? You're a Torah scholar. You went awry. You went heretical. You sinned. Why don't you fix yourself? If you said the pasuk teaches us that a Torah scholar can fix themselves. So So he famously says that, "I've already heard," right? And this phrase is found in different ways, the same idea that Elisha is convinced that he had heard a divine voice, whether it was outside the Beit HaMikdash, whether it was in some other setting, whether it was up in heaven as he was traveling the parties. Shuvu banim shovavim chutz me'acher. That Elisha ben Avuya was convinced that he had perceived that heaven would reject his overtures at return, right? That he would not be able to do tshuva. He had heard it. He heard it himself. And this is the tragedy of Elisha. The tragedy of Elisha ben Avuya is he wasn't willing to apply the lesson of the power of tshuva to himself. Right? He said that Torah scholars, even those who are mistaken, who make mistakes, are able to repent, but he wasn't willing to apply it to himself, right? We have to be willing to teach things to the heart and then take what we're saying to our own hearts, right? We shouldn't only say things to others. We should make sure to listen to what we say. Elisha was telling Reb Meir these wonderful ideas that should have led him to return and to change and to revert from his heresy. But he said, no, he had it in his head that God, the divine, the heavenly court, had already decreed that he would not be able to return. And Reb Meir tries often, right? They remained engaged, and that's a big question on Reb Meir. How could Reb Meir learn from a heretical teacher? And maybe that's one of the lessons that we'll end with. But Reb Meir kept trying. He would engage with his teacher. He would learn from him and then say, why don't you do tshuva? Why don't you return? And Rabbi Akiva and Elisha ben Avuya would keep saying, I cannot. Is it because of the problematic origins of where he came from? Is it because he had it, because of the theological questions, he had it stuck in his head that he would not be accepted as a penitent? We don't know. But we're left off with this tragic perspective on Elisha and his inability, unwillingness to return. This continues to the end of his life. The final source on page 3 talks about how, on his deathbed, Reb Meir comes back to him, right? Last chance, right? Right? And Elisha says, no, I'm not going to be accepted. Reb Meir says, no, everyone can be accepted in tshuva based on a pasuk in Tehillim. And Ba'ot HaShah, we'll just read the last line, Ba'ot HaShah at the final moments of Elisha's life, Bacha Elisha v'nifta. Elisha cries and he dies. The question is, why was he crying? And what happened in that moment? Reb Meir obviously took it to mean, Samach v'libo v'omar domesh v'mitoch tshuva niftar Reb Meir v'mitvokra. Reb Meir took it as tears of repentance. Right? At the last moment, right? At the very last moment, in this world, Elisha did tshuva. By the way, there's this very famous idea that everyone does tshuva after we die, right? Because when we see the truth, we're forced to do tshuva. But Reb Meir saw that even the moment before his death, when he cried, that was an indication that he did tshuva. The story goes on, though, that although Reb Meir may have thought that he did tshuva, the heavenly court's not so sure. Top of page 4, that when Acher passed away, the heavenly court declared that he is neither judged for punishment nor brought to reward in the Olam Haba. He's kind of stuck in between. And the reason given is because he's not eligible for reward in paradise because he was a sinner. Right? He was a big sinner. But he's not liable for the punishment in the world to come because he was truly a Torah scholar. What do you do with him, right? So he's stuck. And Reb Meir found this untenable. Reb Meir said, you can't leave the guy stuck. Let him be judged for his mistakes and then let him be rewarded his due reward in paradise, right? Basically, what Reb Meir was saying is that he wanted Elisha to go to hell so that ultimately he can go to heaven, right? And Reb Meir says, when I die, I'm going to make that arrangement. And you'll know I made that arrangement because you'll see smoke from the grave of Elisha ben Avuya. And so it was that when Reb Meir dies afterwards, there was smoke that emanated from Elisha ben Avuya's grave, indicating, of course, that he was punished. He was rightfully banned from the Beis Medrash. He had punishment that needed to be meted out due to his heresy, but that would ultimately allow him to be brought to to heaven, and that's how the story ends. Another story that comes from after Rabbi Akiva, after Elisha ben Avuya's death, is a story how the daughter of Elisha ben Avuya went to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who compiled the Mishnah, and was destitute, and asked Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi to support her. And Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is incredulous that Acher had a daughter, that Elisha ben Avuya had a daughter. And how is it possible that the seed of such a heretic was allowed to exist in the world, right? Based on the Pasuk in Iyov of chapter 18. So Elisha ben Avuya's daughter says, right? Remember his Torah and do not remember his deeds, right? And immediately fire descended and licked Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's bench, indicating that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was wrong, and that really Elisha ben Avuya's daughter was right, and that's how it happens, that really we're allowed to remember Elisha ben Avuya for good in terms of the Torah that he learned and the lessons that he taught, but he's punished personally for what he did wrong. Right? And this is also seconded by Rabbi Meir, that the Torah of Elisha ben Avuya transcended his evil. Right? That people can be complicated. Right, that people are not one-dimensional. Nobody's all good. Right? Nobody's all bad either. Elisha ben Avuya was a complicated figure, right? And Rabbi Meir was willing to learn from such a complicated figure, right? And the Rabbi Meir's colleagues ask on this source, how is it possible that Rabbi Meir could learn from the mouth of Acher? How can you learn from such a heretic? And he quotes a pasuk from Malachi who says that you learn my word, right? That the personality doesn't matter as much as the content. If the content is the Devar Hashem, if the content is the word of God, then that content can be accepted and internalized and revered, right? Now there is a contradiction here, and the Gemara, the Talmud goes on to suggest that that the top of page 5, that sometimes teachers have to be practicing what they preach, right? That a flawed scholar is not appropriate for children, right? A Rebbe for a child needs to be walking the walk, right? He has to practice what he preaches, right? But a scholar who's flawed can, in fact, be a teacher of adults, right? There's no problem with learning from a flawed scholar. The idea being is that adults should be able to compartmentalize, to understand that no one's perfect, to take what's good and to leave what's bad. That's exactly one of the metaphors that's used for Rabbi Meir. He would eat the date and throw away the pit, right? He would eat the pomegranate and throw away the peel. He would take what's good and throw away what was bad. And whereas that may not be legitimate if you're teaching children who need a very consistent, emphatic message, they don't deal well with ambiguity or paradox or multifaceted, right? Different perspectives on the same thing. You gotta be straight with kids. But when we grow up, we realize that things are not so cut and dry, not so black and white, right? Life is complicated and nuanced and complex. And therefore, it's okay to have a flawed scholar. That doesn't completely invalidate him. Even Elisha ben Avuya was not completely invalidated. If only Elisha ben Avuya was willing to accept that about himself, what Rabbi Meir was willing to accept about Elisha ben Avuya, right? The tragedy of life is often when people are willing to give you the benefit of the doubt and you're not willing to give yourself the benefit of the doubt. That's the tragedy of Elisha ben Avuya. Granted, and that's That's why he went to such extremes, because he wasn't willing to see the complexity, that inconsistency does not disqualify us. And so I think that's where I want to leave it. I want to leave it with some of these lessons that I think Elisha ben Avuya, we can learn from his life. We had only Elisha ben Avuya learn these lessons himself. He may not have been banned from the Beis Medrash forever. He may not have turned to heresy. He may not have thrown the baby out with the bathwater. Right? Fascinating story. Also in that Gemara in Chagiga about Eliyahu HaNavi. We love Eliyahu HaNavi stories. Elijah the prophet. Elijah reveals himself and provides certain insights that humans would not be able to figure out on their own. And in this case, Eliyahu revealed himself to Rabbi Bar Sheila. And Rabbi Bar Sheila asked, what does God do all day? Right? There are different midrashim. There are different answers to this question throughout our Jewish tradition. In this case, Eliyahu told Rabbi Bar Sheila that God quotes the sages of the Talmud and says, Rabbi Akiva said this, and Rabbi Yehuda said this, and Rabbah said this, and Rabbi Tarfon said this, but he never mentions Rabbi Meir. God never mentions a lesson from Meir, which is somewhat jarring, because Rabbi Meir has literally hundreds, if not thousands, of lessons learned in his name in our Talmud. So why is Rabbi Meir not mentioned? Because he learns his halachot from Acher. That's what Eliyahu says. Right? Rabbi Bar Sheila says, but we know, right? The common explanation of why Rabbi Meir can learn from Elisha ben Avuya is because he took the pomegranate and threw out the core, the rind. He ate the date and threw out the pit. He took what was good and he left what was bad. So the story ends that Eliyahu HaNavi says, you're right. Let me get back to you. And God says, now God will begin quoting lessons in the name of Rameir. Right, so ultimately, the perspective of Rameir rules the day, that you can learn from an Elisha ben Avuya, that it's possible. You got to be careful and you got to understand what you can learn and what you can't learn from him. But it's just it's not a chiddush. It's not a great novel insight. If nobody's perfect, then there's no such thing as a perfectly righteous teacher. Elisha ben Avuya is more imperfect than most, but it's not a invalidation, a disqualification from learning what is right from him. Another lesson that we learn from Elisha ben Avuya is the importance of a strong foundation and a proper beginning. Right, Elisha ben Avuya says, my heresy came from my weak beginnings, right? From the fact that I had my father supported me in learning Torah, but his motivation was so that I would get covered, that he would get covered. You can't, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to overcome problematic beginnings, right? And this is reflected in a lesson quoted in the name of Elisha ben Avuya, actually. I didn't give you the beginning of it, but it's the inverse of what I've provided here for you. Avos Dov Nosson, chapter 24, teaches, in the name of Elisha ben Avuya, person who has not done good deeds but has learned Torah is like a person who builds by putting bricks and then stone, right? You're not going to get a watertight seal. And when it rains, the bricks are going to topple over. What do you need to do, right? What do you need to do? You need to put the stone down first. The stone is watertight, and build on top of the stone with bricks. Right? That's the idea of good deeds followed by Torah. You can't just have Torah. You need good deeds as the foundation. Derech Eretz, Kadma LaTorah. Right? You need a proper attitude, a proper behavior, a proper character in order for Torah to flourish correctly. And Elisha ben Avuya didn't have it. Right? And therein lies the tragedy of the story of Elisha ben Avuya. Right, his heresy may not have ever come if he had the proper grounding. If he had the proper grounding, he may have been able to live with a question. Right, Elie Wiesel talks about this a lot when he deals with theological problems, especially ones that emerge from the Holocaust. And he says that the traditional view, first of all, as he says, and we say, you don't judge people. You don't judge people who have gone through theological problems, who have gone through horrors, and that have a problem reverting back to their religious origins. You don't question them. But on the other hand, he said, the authentic traditional response is that you live with the question, right? You live with the theological paradox. You live with the question of why do bad things happen to good people? You don't necessarily, you can answer it. Tradition has some answers, but they may be unsatisfying, and that's okay, right? You don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You don't have to become a heretic. That happens if you don't have a strong foundation. And what's interesting is that that strong foundation is not Torah. That strong foundation is good deeds. If you're predicating your life on those good deeds, on that Weltanschauung, on that worldview, on that persona, and then you add Torah, and then at times that Torah is challenging to things you believe in, to how you understand the world should work. It doesn't have to end like Elisha. You don't have to get banned. Why is Elisha banned? Because his foundation is not one of Torah, of Torah living. It's too academic. It's too in the realm of ideas and not in the realm of action and being. And as a result, I would suggest that's what led him, that since his life is so much predicated on ideas, when ideas don't jive with one another, when there's a conflict, a contradiction, he is lost. He doesn't know how to deal with it. As opposed to a life that's built on character. Yes, we deal with the ideas of Judaism. But when the ideas of Judaism and the theological, philosophical underpinnings don't line up with what we believe to be the case, because our foundation is not ideas alone, but the ideas as they reflect and manifest themselves in the realm of action, we are able to tolerate that type of confusion. Elisha wasn't. And so what I would say from tonight's first character that we were introduced to, Elisha ben Avuya, who's banned from the Beis Medrash, what we learn from him what to avoid. And the way we avoid the mistakes of Elisha ben Avuya is by having a strong foundation, is by predicating our lives on character and behavior, and adding to that ideas, and by understanding that philosophical questions, theological problems, don't have to lead us to be heretical, don't have to lead us to leave the community carte blanche. We can stay within the community. We don't have to be perfectly righteous. We can live with that tension. We can live with that inconsistency. We can even be teachers and live with that inconsistency. Live with that doubt. If Reb Meir can learn from Elisha ben Avuya, then it's okay for us to live with questions while still being teachers to others in so many ways, so long as that knowledge is predicated in our behaviors and our persona and our character. That concludes tonight's shiur on Elisha ben Avuya. Please join me next month. This series will be the first Wednesday of each month, and we'll go from November through March, and next time it'll also be at 8 o'clock. And we will pick up with the next character in our studies. There are a number of powerful examples, and what I hope to show is that in each of these examples, we don't only learn what they did wrong, but we can learn how to rectify their mistake by doing it right for us. All right, we will conclude there.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you all for joining us. Great to see you all. And
thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure, I'll take questions now, absolutely.
This is Sharon. What do you think of As a Driven Leaf? I mean, to me, it was probably one of the most remarkable, thought-provoking books you could read. Really questioning so many different topics.
I think to the extent that there is